Laila. We saw how the first stage is obviously the punishment of the other nations. If you remember the Kranot that are going to be destroyed by the Harashim that he sees, followed by the Malach, or a very interesting dynamic Malach scene. By the way, can anyone tell me, we discussed the fact that Ein Malach Oseh Shdei Shluchiyot, but can anyone tell me why it's the Navi records it in such a way that you feel that one Navi is saying, one second, you stay over here while I go over there, coming back. And what is the idea of almost portraying a very rushed, frenzied scene? Any idea? Very nice. The Gula's coming. I have to do this very quickly. We have to measure Yerushalayim because there it just isn't going to be enough place for everyone living in Yerushalayim. So that's going on. Again, if you remember the end of Perek Bet and Raniva Simchi, a beautiful ending. Not to worry because this really is the time period that we're talking about. Nachal Hashem et Yehuda Chilko, working back off of the Psukim from Hazinu Ki Yaakov Chevel Nachalato. Perek Imol. Vayar'ini et Yehoshua HaKohen HaGadol. The next scene is going to be a very different scene. Again, and that's why the Abba Benel says each one of the scenes of the Marot HaLayla, they're not necessarily consecutive, but rather these are individual scenes that he all saw. And all is this Laila, the night visions that we said doesn't necessarily have to mean that he received them at night, but rather that they appear in a very blurred sense. Now he sees Yehoshua HaKohen HaGadol, that all of you should remember from Chagai. Who is Yehoshua HaKohen HaGadol? He's a direct descendant of Tzadok HaKohen. Again, if you remember, was initially banished, Tzadok and Aviatar, after they participated in the Merit Adoniyahu. Do you remember this? And they were basically placed in the area of Anotot, where Yirmiyahu is from. But these are going to be the lasting line that ultimately goes to Galut Bavel, because if you remember Harash and Masker, it wasn't just the artisans, but it was also the aristocrats of society, including Beit HaMalchut and many, many Kohanim, who have since returned, and we said for good reason, because it's a great job, again, to be a Kohen in Eretz Yisrael. So Yehoshua HaKohen HaGadol, and we're going to see he's standing, Lefnei Malach Hashem, V'hasatan Omed Al Yemino L'Sitno. This Mareh of Yehoshua. Yehoshua, notice, is going to be standing, Lefnei Malach Hashem, and the Satan Omed Al Yemino L'Sitno. Does this scene, by the way, remind you of any other scene where a Satan is standing by someone? L'Satenoto. Again, which we'll get it. Like Eo, very nice. Can anyone tell me, by the way, this is just a very exciting scene. What does the word slash verb Satan mean? Or I'm even going to start by saying, again, who is the Satan? The prosecutor, right? That's how you always learn. And Chazal, whenever the Satan appears, he's the prosecutor for what? What does he prosecute? Or who does he prosecute? And for what does he prosecute? He prosecutes Am Yisrael for what? For Chataim, right? For all the sins of Am Yisrael. Very nice. Again, is there really a figure called the Satan? So again, Chazal, we'll talk about the Satan does this, and we blow the shofar and Elo Lovav Belet HaSatan, as I'm sure you're familiar with. Again, but what we really find is that even though there seems to be a Satan here, and there's a Satan in Eov, we also find the word or verb Satan being used. Remember when we learned those prakim in Shmuel Bet with David HaMelech? Again, Vayaset Hashem, even with the Samach and the Taf, again, basically come from, it's known as a homonymy. It sounds the same and comes from the same source. That Hashem, and one could argue, incited, or Hashem bothered in Sefer Malachim. Sorry, yes, Malachim, when you find in Parakid Aleph that Hashem places a Satan for David, for Shlomo, Ben-Hadad. What does it mean? Ben-Hadad isn't the Satan. Who is he? He's a Satan. He's a prosecutor. He's an enemy. He's an adversary. Right now, do you mind if I ask you? And how many of you believe that there really is a Malach called the Satan? And you don't have to answer this. Right? Perhaps many of us may be influenced from Christian theology where there's belief in a devil. Right? Maybe you even picture the Satan. I don't know, as a red creature with a pitchfork. Again, don't do this. But again, the Satan basically, what we're going to see in general, isn't really a separate malach. There isn't a real Satan necessarily. Even in Sefer Eov, when the Satan is presented, he's presented as the voice of Eov himself. Right, and I'll just prove this to you. Chazal actually tell us, again, if I remember correctly, it's Masechta Brachot, that HaSatan, Hu Yetzahara, Hu Malach HaMavet. What does this mean? Right, so they're all the same. Right? Again, do you picture, by the way, let's start off with maybe the easier ones that you're familiar with. Who's the Yetzahara? Again, when Chazal referred to the Yetzahara, who's the Yetzahara? Something within us. Very nice. That represents what? You know, what is the Yetzahara within us? Thank you. We call it our evil inclination, right? Now, do you really believe that there is a Yetzer Hara, you know, figure, like portrayed sometimes, you know, a little red devil over here, a little white devil, the Yetzer Hara, Yetzer HaTov, telling you, come on, I don't know, speak Lashon Hara, speak Lashon. No, don't. You can't take the words back, right? Meaning is that how you picture it? So on an elementary level, sometimes this is how the Yetzer Hara will be portrayed. Right? Again, beware of the Yetzer Hara as if there's really a creature. But what Chazal mean by it is that the Yetzer Hara really is yourself, right? It's your evil inclination. The Yetzer Hara is what will encourage you, again, that inclination within yourself to sin. So too, again, the Malach HaMavet. Is there a real Malach HaMavet who takes our neshamot away? What do we believe? We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu again takes our neshamot. So who's this Malach HaMavet? Right, you've all read The Book Thief?
Yes.
Excellent. Oh, you should. It's really a phenomenal book. And so you picture this, or how many of you have seen Ghost? Old movie.
Oh, yeah.
Tell you. Yeah, Devorah, you really, Anna, okay. And you, by the way, you probably think that I see a lot of movies. I really don't, but I guess once upon a time, okay, never mind. In any case, back to this, in both of them, the Malach HaMavet is portrayed as like this shadowy figure who comes and wrenches your soul from inside of you. Is that how you picture Malach HaMavet? So I'll make you feel better. Is Malach HaMavet, again, a real creature, so to speak? No, so this is obviously very Maimonidean as well. But so who is the Malach HaMavet? The Chazal are saying that really, Satan Yetzer Hara Malach HaMavet Chadhu. So Dina, think for a minute as well. Who's this Malach HaMavet? He's not an actual creature that takes my neshama away, but... Thank you. A projection of my fear of death. Beautiful. Which, by the way, is a primal fear. Right? Everyone has this fear of death. Yefema Odleya. So, what does it mean? These are all, when Chazal are saying Chadhu, they're saying that these are all fears that I have inside of me. Either or inclinations inside of me. The fear of death, the inclination for sin, now this will help you with the satan. And who's the satan? The satan is myself, but really my conscience. Very nice. Yafeh ma'od. Is really, again, that voice inside of me that's always wondering, am I really good enough? Right? Again, what did I do wrong? Right? There's this and that, which, by the way, you would think, okay, maybe this is something good. Why don't we call the satan and something positive? Maybe call the satan Yetzer HaTov, and yet, why is the satan, again, portrayed as something so negative? Can anyone tell me psychologically? Again, that voice inside of you that says, you know, Esti, you're really not so great, you know? You were late to tefillah this morning. Again, that satan inside that says, you know, well, shame on you for speaking Lashon Hara. Not the one who makes you speak Lashon Hara, but, again, that side that says, shame on you, you know, Deborah, for not learning 23 and a half hours, but only learning 23 hours a day, right? Do you see that? Why is that a negative voice? Why do Chazal say these are all negative aspects of ourselves? Very nice, very discouraging, right? It basically lowers our self-confidence, and obviously these are all then, I would say, these negative prosecutors against ourselves. Keeping this in mind, the Satan figure may not necessarily be an actual figure of Yehoshua ben Yotzadak, but is coming here to portray and the highlighting of the negatives of Yehoshua. Is that okay? So even if Zachariah sees this as a nevuah, it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually sees a Satan figurine, and as much as understanding that what's about to happen is the prosecution of Yehoshua ben Yotzadak for apparently some type of wrongdoing, some type of misdemeanor. What is this? Vayomer Hashem al Satan, Yigar Hashem b'cha Satan, Yigar Hashem b'cha ha-bocher b'Yushalayim, Halo zeh ud mutzal me'esh. Hashem turns to the Satan, again too, with this force that's pointing out the evil of Yehoshua, and saying, Hashem is angry with you, Satan. Hashem is angry with you, ha-bocher b'Yushalayim. And because Hashem here has chosen Yerushalayim, Halo zeh, who's the zeh? He's standing right next to him. Who's the Zeh? Yehoshua ben Yotzadak, the Kohen Gadol, is an Ud Mutzal Me'esh. He's an ember that survived the fire. What fire? He survived the Chorban. That's exactly it. He's a remnant of Shivat Zion. Again, you can't, do not prosecute him. Meaning, what does he have going in his favor? Even if, apparently, there are negatives here. What does he have going for him? He is one of, remember we said, the drop in the bucket that came back. Yeshua haya lavush begadim tzoim. And now Zachariah says, he actually doesn't look so good. He's wearing, according to some, begadim tzoim, definitely means dirty clothing. The question is whether it's clothing that is covered with dung, milashon tzoah, yeah, it's okay, you can grimace, or that it's begadim tzoim, that it's burnt clothing. No matter what, it looks very charred and ugly, as you can imagine. But omei lefnei hamelech, and he's just standing there. Vayan, and then... Again, Hashem will answer, Vayomar el ha'umdim lefanav, right? Because I know that this, ha'umdim lefnei malach Hashem. So the malach says, Hasiru ha'bgadim ha'tzuim me'alav, take off this filthy clothing, Vayomar elav re'eh, havarti me'alecha avonecha. Through taking off the clothing, I am hereby symbolically and absolving you of your sin. Valbesh oto machalatzot. Instead, give him a new set of clothing. Now, why is this significant? The clothing obviously is symbolic, and the dirty clothing symbolic of sin. And now we understand that there really is. Was there a sin here? Was there some misdemeanor? Certainly so. And Hashem continues to say, give him a new set of clothing, and not just that. Tell me what these remind you of. New scarf on his head. And they redress Yehoshua while the Malach is there. If you are careful in, what does it mean? Preserving my mishmeret. These are terms that are used specifically for Kohanim and Levim with regard to safeguarding the chatzer of the Beit HaMikdash. If you properly observe the laws of Kohuna, then I will make you, I will place you amongst these mahalchim, who are the ones who are walking around. Again, he means these other malachim, right? Then you will be considered like one of my malachim, like one of my shlichim. Shemana Yehoshua Kohen Gadol, atav reicha yoshvim lefanacha, ki anshei mofei tema, kineni mevi et avdi tzemach. So you just wait, Yehoshua Kohen Gadol. You and your peers can wait till you see. You're going to be part of amazing times. These are amazing people. What makes them amazing? Because you're going to be living during a time wherein I'm going to allow for my evet tzemach. Again, have we heard of Tzemach before? In Yirmiyahu, Tzemach David, again, these are the terms that we incorporate in Tefillah. When Yirmiyahu also talks about the future of Malchut Beit David, and he says, again, that David is going to have a sprout, and he'll be called Tzemach, again, which is, again, certainly appropriate for the sprout, for the blossom of David. By the way, I'm sure you're familiar with this very popular name within Chabad. Again, many Chabad families call one of their children Tzemach. Why? The Tzemach Tzedek, as I'm sure you're familiar with, because of the belief that the belief of Mashiach, right? So Tzemach, Tzemach, Tzemach. By the way, especially if they're born when? They're born on Tisha B'Av. They call them either Menachem or Tzemach. Then just know that. Okay, we're going to get to this seven-eyed stone in just a moment. And anyone familiar with a little bit of Christian eschatology should be familiar with this. Again, but you're also saying, no, why should we be familiar with Christian eschatology? That's a good thing. Okay, so back to this for a moment. So we definitely do see that there's some satan against Yehoshua, but Hashem decides to absolve Yehoshua, basically give him a fresh start as a Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. And the question that the Parshanim ask is, what is this avon? We know there's an avon for which the satan side is prosecuting Yehoshua, but we don't know what the avon is. The Parshanim explain that from Sefer Ezra, we do know the avon. Remember, we discussed some of the both economic, social, religious problems going on. Here, the Parshanim explained that Yehoshua ben Yotzadak had a son who married the daughter of Sanballat. Does that name sound familiar from Sefer Ezra? Sanballat was the head of the Shomronim. And remember, I told you that the Shomronim, not only did they want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt in Shechem, but they also were claiming the rights of Israelite lineage. And they said, we are the chosen descendants of Yaakov. And as such, they were trying to encourage the Yehudim, you're the rejects, you're the Judeans who were living on Babylonian soil for so long. You were the ones who were punished and cast out of the country. If I were you, I think you should intermarry with us. And the truth is it so bad externally to marry a Shomroni? Are they keeping Shabbat? Are they keeping some of the mitzvot hatzuyot ba'aretz, the agricultural festivals? Definitely. And now this is what I call like the old brand of Reform Judaism. You want to know what I mean by this? That on the outside, again, there's something very Jewish to them, very Israelite to them. But are they really Shomrei Torah or mitzvot as we know it? In addition to the fact, keep in mind that you also have to remember this is going to be the beginnings of what we call rabbinic Judaism now that Nevuah is going to wane. The halachic system is going to take over. You know this? And this then is a very significant transition that takes place right now, wherein Yehoshua, instead of again putting his foot down and saying, no, 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 we have to remain Judean, we have to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, he is going to arrange for this mixed marriage, again, with Sanballat. And for this, he is basically going to be accused of a terrible sin. Hashem says, I'm giving you a chance, O Yehoshua. Again, if you serve properly, then you can help catalyze this entire process of redemption. And how do I know that we're really talking about Geula? Not only because these are Anshei Mofet. Not only because, again, I'm going to raise Tzemach. Now, Tzimach, by the way, isn't literally, again, the name of the king, and as much as the blossom of Malchut Beit David. So if I want to place this back in chronological context, who is Hashem referring to? When he says, wait till you see, Hineni Mevi et Avdi Tzimach, I'm bringing the son of David. Who's the son of David in this historical time? Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. We all say that. So here, I'm going to be raising him. Ki hinei ha'evan asher natati lefnei Yoshua, al evan achat sheva inayim. Now comes the stone. And you see, I'm going to place a stone in front of Yoshua with seven eyes. I'm going to engrave these seven eyes on a stone. And this is a sign of getting rid of all the sins of the people. Just like I'm redressing Yoshua, I'm going to give again a new, fresh start for everyone. What does that remind you of? We're going to be restored to Ish Tachakapno Matachateinoto. When does that appear? You're supposed to say throughout Nevi'im, right? That utopian society, starting from when? When was everyone sitting? Ish tachat gafno tachat einato, time period of Shlomo HaMelech. But yes, Yeshayahu built off of this as well. So he says, we are reaching utopian times. Do I know what this stone with seven eye means? No. Again, other than the fact that apparently it's supposed to be a sign of Geula. So with this, we continue. Parak Talit. Vayashaf HaMelech HaDoverbi. Vayareni ki isha sheyor mishnato. Even if you were sleeping until now because the air conditioning went off. Again, take a look and see how this is going to be the most significant nebuah in Zechariah, reason being, not because it really is contextually, but because it's the one that's most well known, because we read this as the Haftorah for Shabbat Chanukah. Everyone ready for this? Rega, vayashav ha-malach ha-doverbi, vayareni ki isha sher yor mishnato, vayamar elai ma ata ro'eh. Again, and he asks Zechariah, so Nu, what do you see? And he understands that, for those who remember, again, this terminology from Yirmiyahu and from Amos, Ma'ata ro'eh, when does Hashem ask a question like that, Tad? Ma'ata ro'eh? You remember?
When it's hard.
Not Moshe? When? Beautiful. When it's something that could potentially, I'm sorry for putting you on the spot, when it's something that could potentially be misinterpreted. Nachon? Ma'ata ro'eh. So what do you see, Zechariah? Now we're a little surprised because we know how has Zechariah been doing with his seeing of Nevuot. Can't really see so well. Yefer Ma'on. So again, what we're going to be challenged here and trying to figure out, I don't know, how could this be misconstrued? Let's take a look. Vayomer ba'iti, v'inei minorat zahav kula, v'gula al rosha. You know, I see a big menorah, again, of gold, v'gula al rosha. There's a big marble on its head. And the question is, what type of menorah are we talking about? Because menorot during this time really have two meanings, right? What are you familiar with when you think of a menorah? You think of kind of the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash, right? A seven-branch candelabra. But really, a menorah, anyone know even in modern Hebrew, a menorah can mean also, we call this a menorah, right? A light source, a menorah. We put a nurah in a menorah. Got that? Again, a light fixture is called a menorah. So it could even mean that he means a light fixture. Anyone know what light fixtures look like during this time period? So not so much a candelabra, but think back to even Bar Kokhba times. And this is obviously much earlier than Bar Kokhba times, but they used to place, I'm sure you've seen this, in the Bar Kokhba caves, and clay, very nice, clay little structures, right, that you would put oil in, and then a wick, right, a floating wick. Right, can you picture this? So maybe that's what he means. I see seven of these menorot, meaning I see like a bowl of oil with seven light sources here, v'gula rosha. And therefore, again, there are different ways of understanding what he actually saw. V'shavani rota aleha, either seven wicks, or just like Devorah said, or seven branches with their candles. V'shiv'a mutzakot lanerot asher al roshav. And leading into each one of the seven branches, there are mutzakot. There are like pipelines leading into the branches. Can you all picture this? Picture either Devorah's menorah, the menorah of the Mikdash. You mind that I'm going to associate it with you just for a moment? Picture a menorah, seven branches. Each one of the branches has like a pipe attached to it or leading to it. You picture, or I can picture it like my bowl with the seven wicks, and there are seven different pipes. No matter how you look at it, definitely the seven branches is much more elaborate. Sorry, pipes, like little pipes, little vessels leading to it. You're about to find out. Beautiful. Asher rosha ushnayim zeitim aleham, and there are two. What are zeitim? Olive. So you know, then the Knesset is portrayed as olive branches. The pshat seems to be olive trees, right? When you just say the name, it's the tree. And there are two olive trees on top of it, right? Ushnayim zeitim aleha, achad miyamin hagula v'achad al smola. So now I have a picture of this. Olive tree, coming from the olive, in between the olive trees is a big marble, right? And then underneath the olive tree are these seven pipes leading into the either the seven branches of the menorah or the seven light sources themselves. Do you see that? And now what happens? Notice that Zachariah doesn't want to take a chance. He recognizes that Hashem, by virtue of the fact that he's asking, what do you even see? He knows, okay, this definitely can definitely be misinterpreted. Can any of you try? Again, so you're ready to borrow with your Ruach HaKodesh experience. Again, move from mouse to menorah for a moment and tell me, then what could this mean? And especially think a little bit along Devorah's lines. Oh, sorry, that's cute. Okay, Devorah, work in collaboration. And she said the seven branches are the seven branches of a menorah. And like we have in the Beis HaMikdash. So what could it mean? That we're going to be able to? Have a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't that sound nice? Meaning that the symbol of the menorah means what? I don't know, from prior association as well. I'd assume, what does the menorah symbolize? Apparently, the last person who saw a menorah was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And what did it symbolize? It symbolizes the or of Hashem, right? In the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning, we'll say it's what type of symbol? A ritual religious symbol, right? How's that? You ready? Zachariah says, I don't know. I really don't know what it means, because if you're asking me ma taru'eh, then I don't want to misinterpret it. Vayad vayomai lai lemar zet bar Hashem el zrubavel. And now you should already see how confusing this was. This is not a religious message scene. How do you know? Because if it was, who should it be addressed to? Or Yehoshua. Excellent. Rather, to Zerubbabel. He's the political leader. Lemor lo b'chaya v'lo b'koach kim beruchi amar Hashem tzvaot. You're all familiar with this pasuk. And this is to show you that your political power, Zerubbabel, is not going to come through chayel and koach. It's not going to come through physical means of force, but rather through the Spirit of God. What's representative of the Spirit of God? That's why I said it doesn't necessarily have to be the candelabra of the Beis HaMikdash. It could be the fire. That's exactly it, the Spirit of Hashem. And with this, we're going to understand a few more sugyot throughout Tanakh a little more. Now we see what is Hashem trying to say. Yes, there's going to be a major political upheaval, but I don't want you to attribute it to any military force. Again, very similar to again, Eila Barecha Ve'ila Basusim Anachim B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Naskir. So here, a very similar idea. Lo B'chayav Lo B'Koach, your source, Rubavel, is going to be the menorah, i.e. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do we know then, by the way, that fire in general doesn't necessarily represent or doesn't just mean, again, the Spirit of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash? Where else did you have the fire of Hashem? Yeah, the Ner Tamid in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but where, even outside of the Beis HaMikdash, do you have an Eish Hashem? You have the Sne, you have Hatina, you have the Amud Eish. Again, accompanying Am Yisrael throughout the years in the Midbar. And sure enough, Chazal asked, Rabbi Yossi asked, what, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need the fire? Again, he is the fire. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need the fire in the Beis HaMikdash? Why does he need the Amud Eish? No. Labiot, it's not even for Hashem. Rather, so that Am Yisrael should know that Shechinat Hashem, that Hashem is the one leading them throughout the Midbar. Meaning, fire, again, the source of light in Tanakh, is representative of the physical manifestation of the Shechinah. We'll see that. And therefore, this menorah that perhaps even Zachariah isn't sure, because he just saw Yehoshua. He's giving religious messages, but he's also giving political messages. Hashem says, this is a political message. The political message is that I am with you. And it's not going to be physical strength, but rather godly spiritual strength. Miatahar gadol lefnei Zerubbabel lemishor. Again, any obstacle in front of Zerubbabel is going to be flattened out. Voltia ta even harosha, and then you're going to take the even, the one with the seven eyes, chuot chen chenla. And we're going to get back to the seven eyes. But now we appreciate it all the more that you're going to be successful. Vayhid v'Hashem elei lemor. Yidei Zerubbabel yistuha bayit hazeh. Zerubbabel is going to help establish the Beis HaMikdash. V'yadav tevatz'ana. And wait till you see his hands are going to establish it, and then you'll know, says Zachariah, that I sent you. Very similar to what Haggai said. Kimi vaz liyom ktanot, because the one who mocked, again, the days, who would be the one to mock the days now? Just like Haggai said, the ones who saw the first base of Mikdash, and were like, oh yeah, right, this one is going to be a nice service. Wait till they see this beautiful Evan in the hands of Zerubbabel. Shiva Eile Enei Hashem. The seven eyes represent the seven eyes of God. Hema Meshotetim B'chol Ha'aretz. God throughout the land. And some person explained that the seven eyes of Hashem are really seven shlichim of Hashem, seven leaders. Again, Christian interpretation is that these are seven signs. You ever hear about the seven signs prior to the apocalypse? Again, so it comes here from Zechariah, in addition to other apocalyptic messages that the Gospels are going to refer to. So now, Ken? Because Megiddo is an international city, right, wherein, where we see, again, Zechariah is going to mention it also, and we know that Yoshiyahu went there, remember, to fight against Paro Necho, and so this is where, like, major empires turn around. So that's the idea that the apocalypse will have a political, will provide for a political war, specifically in this international city in the heart of Eretz Yisrael. So now, back to this. Again, now we see this a little more. This Sheva Eila Einai Hashem. This is part of the process of Geula. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Va'on va'omar Eilav. Mashne hazeitim ha'eila. So now Zechariah says, I understand this menorah symbol. It represents the spiritual force through which Zerubbabel is going to be successful in establishing the Beit HaMikdash. But what are these two olive trees? Ayimin ha'menorah v'yasmola on either side. Va'an shinit va'omar Eilav. Mashne shubalei hazeitim ha'shabiyat shnei tzantzorot hazav ha'merikim alei anazav. He says, what are these? Again, two olive trees doing by the pipes, the two pipes leading into the candelabra. Come on, Zechariah, you know what these are. Note that the Nevi is going to preserve even this very obscure dialogue that is going to transpire between them in order to show you how amorphous, or how, again, I would say ambiguous, these scenes are, to show you that it's very difficult. Now, what does this mean? According to the Rambam, this is a sign that Nevuah is waning. And it's important for you to know this. I know, but I'd like to argue that even beyond Nevuah waning, it's telling you that these are difficult times. Again, I think back to modern Shivat Zion. I think, you know, the initial religious Zionists really believed in Reshit Tzmichat Gulatenu. And then, as you know, many religious Zionists left the Zionist movement because they saw how the socialists and the secularists were taking over. And you can imagine how it was very difficult. Again, Rav Kook addresses this very much even prior to Hakamat Medinat Yisrael. Is this a good thing to be involved in, or is it not a good thing to be involved in? I always wonder, if I was living in 1945, right, in Europe or in Eretz Yisrael, or for that matter, even in New York, right? I don't know, were there Jews in Milwaukee in 1945? Probably. Again, so in this case, again, what would I say? Should I be part of the Zionist movement? Do you ever, again, I don't want you to look now post facto. Again, try to put yourselves in, again, in those times. Do you think you would have been a Zionist? A religious Zionist, I'm sure, but I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know. I would have turned to the Gedolim. And as you know, they were very split, again, on these issues. And as you know, this is when Rav Soloveitchik left the Aguda and joined Mizrahi. And I don't know. I really, I'm still bothered by this, sorry?
Are there people who went before, like, even the Aliyot, just, like, before there was even an issue of secularism?
Marinais, I don't even mean, right, going as individuals living in Eretz Yisrael, that, everyone agrees, that's a wonderful thing. Balei Haptos, Vot, Tamidim of the Gra, sorry? Correct, meaning starting a Jewish society, and ultimately pushing for autonomy, fighting sometimes Jews against Jews. Right? This is a very, very difficult thing. Gana, so now, yes, I see Leah also has a very troubled look on her face. And now, again, just keep this in mind that this is, to a certain degree, what's going on over here. I don't know. Like Zechariah is saying, I don't know how to understand these times. Is it going to happen quickly? Is it not going to happen quickly? What's amazing, by the way? In the end, you see that it really was, like, very shady, obscure times, right? You've all read Exodus, right? I'm just trying to think of, no? Jerusalem? Excellent, thank you. And so you have a sense of, again, just the political underpinnings and tensions of that time. So Zechariah is living during a very similar time period. He said, I don't know how to understand this. When is it? Looking back, post facto, what do we see? Oh my gosh, it really was pretty simple. Right? It really was clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us establish a Jewish state, again, based on, more or less, okay, kind of, again, Torah mitzvot, right? And this is part of the difficulty that we have till today. Is Eretz Yisrael supposed to come about through, again, a theocratic means of Shmirat Torah mitzvot, or are we okay with it coming through secular means / political means, and through that, right, Rav Kook encouraged that maybe through then, again, v'di'evid, we'll be able to establish a more Torah-based society. So I just want you to see that the ambiguity in the Nevuah perhaps is an expression of the ambiguity of the times. And even the Gedolei Hador aren't really sure how to understand this. Vayomer Eli lemar, halo yadata ma'ila v'amar lo adoni. Zachariah says, I don't know how to interpret this. Vayomer Eli shnei b'nei ha-yitzar. These are the two children of what's Yitzhar? Yitzhar, yes, is both from the family of Levian, but it's olive oil. Yes, no, these are the two children of olive oil. What does that mean? To be a child of olive oil. It means that, sorry? That you're smart. That's very cute. That's also very cute. Okay, now, so that's not what he means here. What does it mean to be a son of oil? It means that you're anointed with oil. Who are the two? Kohanim and Melachim. Very nice. Ha'omdim al Adon Kol Aretz. These are the two appointees of Hashem, right? Which is beautiful. What does that tell you? So here I have the Ruach of Hashem symbolized by this menorah. And on either side, the source of it is going to come from, again, both the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. What is that trying to say? How are you going to establish the state, literally? How are you going to establish the government? Both by political means, but also spiritual, religious worship. Isn't this beautiful? And you're also supposed to say, oh my gosh, now I understand why this is the symbol of the Medina. Right? Especially, oh, you've been teaching it this month, Nachon. Again, why is it that, did you ever wonder this? Why is it that the symbol of the of Medina Israel, right, in the Knesset, what is it? It's a menorah with two olive branches. You notice this? Again, so there are all different explanations. But Noga HaRuveni was the one who established the Ilkdumim, a botanist. What did he explain? He says, it's all based on Sefer Zechariah, that you have to remember that those who founded the government were very much, again, continuing the Am HaSefer ideals that were very much connected to Tanakh. So the menorah isn't just a symbol anymore of what exists in the Beis HaMikdash, but now what is the menorah a symbol of? Of political government. And what is the basis of this government? Ruach Hashem, right? That's why it's in the form of fire. And what, though, serves as the basis? What upholds this spiritual government of God? Both the political leadership and religious leadership. Isn't that nice? So to be true to Zechariah, maybe instead of olive branches, they should have had olive trees, but this is very nice. Gena, so ultimately what we see is this Nevuah, which is a Nevuah to Zechariah, about the reestablishment of government. That's why he's addressing Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, and it's going to come about also through Yehoshua ben Yotadak. So notice now the structure of these prakim. Have a Yehoshua scene, have a menorah scene that could definitely be associated with Yehoshua. Lo and behold, it's really associated with Zerubbabel, and then bring them together through these two Bnei Yitzhar. Even though you're extremely exhausted, isn't this exciting? Gana, this is a beautiful scene over here. So now, Perakei Pasuk Aleph, Ashuv Esayna Ve'Revine Megillah Afa. Remember, I told you we're going to see some exciting scenes. So, here's one. I really believe that J.K. Rowling must have read Zechariah. Gana, all of a sudden, he sees a flying scroll. Now, this doesn't wow you anymore because you're living in a post-Harry Potter age, but, again, a flying scroll. You don't see something like this every day. Nachon, not even in Nevuah. They are like, Ma'ataroeh. Again, so what do you see? He's like, okay, I do not know. Va'omar Aniro and Megillah Afa. Again, just like Yirmiyahu. Okay, this can be misinterpreted. You can see, again, a flying scroll. It can mean a lot of things. He says, all I see is a flying scroll. Arka esrim ba'arma. And he says, it looks like about 20 amma in length. Rachba eser ba'ma. That's a really big scroll over here. Va'yamai lai zota Allah. You know what's written on the scroll? And a curse. This is the curse that God is sending on the land. Because whoever is going to steal from this, again, is going to be completely destroyed. And whoever, again, swears of this, meaning anyone who is going to transgress any one of the conditions of the curse is going to be hit by the curse. Hashem let out this curse. And the reason why it's flying is to show you that this is a curse of God. And that this scroll is looking for anyone who's transgressing any one of the iniquities of the scroll. So if you're a thief, for example, what will the scroll do? will come chasing after you, right? Like a Quidditch broom, right? It's going to come chasing after you. Gonna notice this into your house. Anyone who swears my name in vain, I'm just going to sit there, meaning the curses are going to come to life. And we'll get rid of him. And what's Eitzva Evan that you're familiar with throughout Tanakh? All of his full sources of security / Avodah Zarah and beyond. So that's another scene. Now the Malach says, okay, come on, Zechariah, you're going to catch another interesting scene. What do you see coming out now? He says, okay, va'omar mahi, va'yomer, and the Malach says, you don't see this? Zot ha'ifa ha'yotzeit. He says, you don't see there's a measurement of an eifa. Va'yomer zot einam b'chol ha'aretz. And sure enough, here, the idea of the ifa, this measurement, is this is what's going to come out. This is the eye that's going to come and see what's going on in the land. Next, as if things aren't strange enough. What does it mean, by the way, if there's an ifa? I told you an ifa is a measurement. So how do you see a measurement? I picture like a measuring cup, or the parshanim here explain that, like a barrel, right, that can fit an ifa. Next thing, you ready? V'hine kikar oferet niseit. Next, he sees that the... there is a flying iron loaf. Okay, are you confused enough? Again, it gets better. Again, being carried. Vizot isha achat. Now he sees that what looked like a flying loaf is really whom? It's really a woman. Yoshevet betoch ha'ifa. So now we understand that the ifa was like a barrel type. He sees a flying barrel. Next thing he sees, there's something, someone in the barrel. And then, vayomer zot harisha. Says this is a symbol of evil. Are you surprised that the woman be used as a symbol of evil? No, not at all. Because can anyone tell me which other Sfarim in Tanakh the woman is used as a symbol of evil? In Mishlei, right? If you look at Mishlei Perakei, again, the Isha Hara'a is the symbol. She's the mashal for every negative seduction, right? In Kohelet, right? Isha b'cholela lo matati, again, v'hine mar mi mavet et ha'isha. Right, worse than death is the woman. Right, she is the epitome of all evil. I say like you're okay with this. Okay, now Talia's into this. That's right. Again, do you like this? That
no, it was
again,
just on today's daf.
Ah, nachon, yafem od, beautiful. So, what does she symbolize? So, why is it being used? All these psukim. So, do you mind if I ask? And out of all the different symbols that we find incorporated, and in Tanakh. Again, many of them due to changes in society and I would even say social interpretation and association are no longer relevant. But the woman till today, really, what does the woman symbolize? When you see a picture of a woman on an advertisement, what does she symbolize? Why is it that a woman who's sitting on a Mazda or drinking a can of Coca-Cola, again, she symbolizes seduction, right? Again, she's more seductive and therefore she's going to sell the product better. All right, we're okay with that, no? Okay, again, so the woman symbolizes seduction. And seduction generally is negative, right? Again, think of Chava seducing Adam, whatever the case may be. However, I'm going to redeem women for a moment. Is that okay? Not only because I am a woman, because Tanakh redeems women. Where in the same Mishlei, there's also, how does it end? Parak Lamed Aleph. Eshet Chayil, Miyimsa, she becomes the Mashal. Also for Yirat Hashem, she becomes a mashal for every positive type of wisdom. And therefore, the woman, yes indeed, she symbolizes seduction through wisdom. I'm sure you're familiar from the Greek, big fat Greek wedding, right? That the man may be the head, but the woman is the neck, right? Because she's seduced in whatever way. And it's very true. Nachon? I remember laughing also. No, that's all. Okay, and why is this significant? Because the woman can also obviously seduce for something positive, that she has this inner talent that can represent the most beautiful of chachmot. But back to this context here, obviously, she is the seduction. She is, again, I'm going to use Chazal terminology, she would be the symbol of the Yetzahara, right? That's why I'm turning back to Dina. So, v'zot harisha v'yeshachotah al tol chayifa, and he says, this is a symbol of evil, so she's going to be pushed inside this barrel, v'yeshach ha'teven ha'oferet al-epiha, and then this flying loaf is really the lid. So, the lid is going to close her in. So, can anyone tell me why this is portrayed as one parshia? I have a flying scroll with a flying barrel with a woman inside the barrel and an iron lid to close her up. They're trying to say? Really, what's the nimshal over here of this nevuah? What is Zechariah meant to understand from this?
The scroll is going to help get rid of sin.
Very nice. Is the scroll a literal scroll? Is Hashem going to cast a flying scroll throughout the land? No. What does it mean? That Hashem is basically saying it's not only a time of peace, and it's not only the perfect time to start rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash from a political and from a spiritual perspective, but I'm getting rid of all evil in this world. Right, again, the Rabbi Chala Hashem Dima Me Al Kol Ha'aretz, right? There's not going to be any more evil, any more crying, any more problems throughout the land. Again, this is where I feel, okay, like Shweki comes to life, you know, cry no more Yerushalayim, because there's a flying scroll here that's going to punish anyone who does anything wrong, and evil is going to be dissolved. Right? Or, okay, back to Harry Potter, this is like Voldemort is going to be captured forever. Right? Again, just picture this. And which, by the way, the reason why I really do believe she read Zechariah is that there are symbols over here, right, for all the evil in the world, right? You know, that he whose name shall not be named, again, it's meant to symbolize all the evils that exist. So back to this, Pasuk Tet. Next, he sees two flying women. And looks like they have wings of storks. Again, very big wings. And they're going to carry this barrel with evil in it. Where are these angelic looking, right? Again, bird like looking woman, where are they carrying the barrel to? To use it as a basis to build a home. Where's Eretz Shinar? Sorry, in Babel. That's exactly where they started building Migdal Babel. Oh, so the evil, is it really just going to explode and there won't be evil? No, there will still be evil, but where? All the evil will be concentrated in Eretz Shinar, Vayeshachotel Tocha, and sorry? Very nice. And he says that's where it belongs, right? That, sure enough, he sees it being placed in its right place, right? Al hamachon shela, right? In its settled place. And the idea here that sure enough Chazal will elaborate upon is that Hashem allows for evil in this world, but it should be concentrated in different lands that could actually tolerate the evil, right? So it's going to be placed in Bavel, that's going to symbolize the evil, and as Vera said very nicely, once there's evil there, what will happen? Then the curses will come upon it. Yafe ma'od. So all the curses to Bavel. Perek Vav. Va'ashov. Va'asayinai ve'revinei arbar markavot yotot mibein shnei harim v'harim harim nechoshet. Next he sees four markavot. Right? Four chariots coming out between the mountains. And the mountains are made from copper. Memerkava rishona susim adumim. Memerkava sheni susim shchorim. Does this remind you of anything? Yes, the very first scene of the Isha Medvein Adasim with, again, if you remember the Susim. Now, so now different colors. Again, last time they were Lavan and Srukim and Adumim. Now they're Adumim and Shchorim and Levanim. And now we also have Brudim, which is also the more Bordeaux looking. Amutzim. Again, now strong horses, which means that last time they were individual horses, giving us the impression that they're coming from individual lands, each one and its own. Again, giving us the impression even, as we discussed the Crimson Tide analogy, that these are individuals coming from, again, lands that are under the Persian rule. But now they're not just coming as individual horses. How are they coming? Coming as chariots, giving us a sense that these are established kingdoms over here. This time I see a lot of horses, but in a chariot form. This time these are, again, these are strong horses. These are really the expressions of the four different directions of the world. Yotzot mityatev al adon kal aretz, and they have just left the master of the world. They have left Hashem. By the way, why is it appropriate that a merkava should come from Hashem? Because Masa Merkava, the physical manifestation of the Shechin in this world, is through the celestial chariot, giving you the impression that it's also more, again, Rechave Susei Eish, remember that Eliyahu, or that Elisha saw Eliyahu go up in? Asher ba susim hashchorim. Sure enough, they're going to go to the four different directions, north, south, east, west. But come along the strong ones, and they ask to survey the world. Again, giving us the impression that each of them came from their select lands. That's why they have select colors, because each one represents one of the different corners of the world that came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now Hashem is sending them back. And giving us also a certain sense of the continuity from the first Nevuah to assure that there's not only peace in the land, but what's the Chidush that we just saw from the previous Parshia? There's also purity, goodness, the, again, banishment of evil from the land. But these really brave horses come and they want to survey the land. Vayazekuti, Vayzabarilai Lamor, Ve'eha Yotzim al Eretz Tzafon, Henichu et Ruchi, Be'eretz Tzafon. Again, yes, and you see which direction apparently are they going to go off to? Hayotzim al Eretz Tzafon, Henichu et Ruchi, Be'eretz Tzafon. They're going to stay there in Eretz Tzafon. Again, what's Eretz Tzafon? The Babylonian lands. Again, almost as if, okay, say goodbye to these lands. Vayhiz Varshem alai Lamor, Lakoach me'et Hagula, Mecholda, O me'et Tuvia. Now Hashem comes to Zechariah and he says, taken from the Gola are these people. Take from Chaldai and Tuvia and Yedaya and come to the house of Yoshia ben Tzfaniah, Asher ba'u mi Bavel. Apparently these are, we'll even say, some of Zechariah's colleagues, Zerubbabel's colleagues that have come from Bavel. V'lakachta kesef v'zahav, and I want you to take from their homes, and our impression is, I hope, that he asked them permission. Again, but you have to remember this is Nivuah anyway, so I don't even know whether he actually acts this out or not. And as we said, according to the Rambam, this would all be symbolic, figurative, according to the Abarbanel. Again, take it literally. And but whatever the case is, we're going to have to try to appreciate the message. By the way, the very fact that there's gold and silver in their house, what does that tell you? These are the wealthy, affluent people who have returned from Bavel, where they made a nice living. Vasita atarot, and I want you to make crowns out of them. Vesamta brosh Yoshua ben Yotzadak kohen gadol, and now give Yoshua a crown. Some parshanim explain what crown is this. Perhaps, what does a kohen gadol wear? Remember Hashem said, give him a tzeif. What scarf does he wear on his head? He wears a mitznefet, right? But what is he missing? The tzitz, made from gold. Yafema'od. So, and now give him, so to speak, the tzitz, give him a crown. One of them will go to Yoshua. V'amarte lov le'mar, k'amar Hashem tzvaot le'mar, hine ish semach shmo, mitartav yitzmach uvanat echal Hashem. Here is the man named Tzemach. Now here, it doesn't mean Tzemach as the descendant of Beit David. Here's the blossom. Why does that fit in nicely? Tzemach is the blossom, because what is the tzitz, actually? A blossom, right? Tzitz and Tzemach are related. The tzitz is the blossom, and Tzemach is the sprout. You all see that? This is very nice. Sorry? The word tzitz. Tzitz means a blossom. Why is it called, though? Can anyone say, why is the tzitz called a blossom? Because it literally sprouts up from his head, from his forehead. Isn't that nice? Which is one of the explanations for why Aharon's staff, again, not only did it flower, but first, hotzitzitz. Right? Again, the tzitz and the perach. So now back to this. Here we're going to start a line again of Kahuna, and through Yoshua ben Yotzadak, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. So what is it a reference to? Here is Tzemach, and he is going to build the Hechal Hashem, but then it says, V'yakohen al kiso, v'atat shalom tia ben shnehem. So what is it a reference to? So sure enough, the Parshanim explained, Tzemach goes back to the previous perek, to the Malchut. And here the Malchut is going to work together with the religious leader, giving us a sense of the ideal of a theocracy, by the way. And the religious leader and the political leader, v'atarot tia l'chilam. And sure enough, the crowns will be to their strength, giving us the impression that who gets the second crown? Obviously, the king. Why don't you have to hear that the second crown is for the king? Because the king always gets a crown, right? So you're going to make two. One's going to be for the Kohen Gadol, the other is going to be for the king. And Tiel Chilam, this will be their strength. And Tel Ulatuvia Vladaya Ulachen Ben Tzfania Lizikaron Behechal Hashem. And we're going to keep these. It's not like they're going to be walking around all day. They're really symbolic crowns. Again, tell them that these are going to be a Zikaron Lefnei Hashem. Can anyone tell me any other time that you find that something in the Beis HaMikdash was a Zikaron Lefnei Hashem? If you turn back for a moment to Shmot, Perek Chafet, and you find, lo and behold, that the big day kahuna. If you look at Perek Chafet, Pesukim Vav through Yudbet, describing the Ephod. The Ephod is, look at Pasuk Yudbet, V'samtat shnei avanim al ketfot ha'ephod avnei zikaron levnei Yisrael, V'nasa aron et shmotam levnei Hashem al shnei ketefav lezikaron. And then again, look at the Choshen, Pesukim Tet Vav through Lamed. Again, and look at just Lamed for a minute. V'natat et choshen ha-mishpat et ha-urim. Here we go. Et ha-urim et ha-tumim v'aya liv arum v'o l'fnei Hashem v'nasa aron et mishpat b'nei Yisrael libo l'fnei Hashem tamid. But it's also, again, the idea of, sorry, Pasuk Chavtet, l'zikaron l'fnei Hashem tamid. Do you see that? So just like the choshen and the ephod, again, we're meant to be as Yikaron Lefnei Hashem Tamid. What does that mean? It means for Hashem to remember Am Yisrael, either through the 12 stones that he wears on his heart or the 12 stones that he wears on his shoulders, literally facing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and carrying the responsibility on his shoulders. Again, that's a way of reminding Hashem. How does these crowns serve Lizikaron Lefnei Hashem? As a remembering, again, remembrance for Hashem, again, within the Beit HaMikdash, Ulizikaron Be'echal Hashem, remembering that this is, again, that through at least the Kohen Gadol and the Melech, this is how Am Yisrael are going to be revived. Notice, by the way, a major transformation that happens. The Parshanim points out that, wait a second, if this is a Zikaron, then why not just have a Choshen and a Nefod? Again, telling us that maybe what's missing? We don't yet have a Choshen and Nefod. Why wouldn't there be a Choshen and Nefod? What happens to the Choshen and Nefod of the first Beis HaMikdash? Babylonians took them. Again, so what did they do? You know this from the various stories of the Gemara, that they went looking for the stones of the Choshen, right? Zama Benatina, right? So they basically fashioned a new Choshen and a new Ephod during the time of Bayit Sheni, only when they had sufficient funds. And isn't that sad? So they didn't always have this. Even though in the famous story of Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great, which is a very historically inaccurate story, right? They come out, but he saw his fate, but he was coming out, the mentor he came out with a Choshen, but that's already, again, later. So we already get a sense that maybe he's given the new begadim, the linen clothing, the mechnasayim, and maybe even a me'il, but, and a tzitz and a mitznefet, but he doesn't yet have the choshen and the ephod. So these two crowns are representative of the glory of kohuna and of malchut. So mind if I ask you, the reason why I said a major transformation takes place here is who are the major leaders in Bayit Rishon? Who has political power in Bayit Rishon?
King.
Who is the major religious power during Bayit Rishon? So the king, again, Dvar is right, has the power to establish a religious policy based on, how is he going to know what to do religiously? Based on the Navi, right? The Navi is the dominant religious leader. How about the Kohen in Bayit Rishon? What's his role? Very nice. They're just Avoda people. Very nice. Meaning they're in charge of religious worship in the Beis HaMikdash. What's happening here? Already here you see that it's like the Kohen has been promoted, right? Because what's happening simultaneously? You're supposed to feel this, right? Nevuah is getting less clear. Nevuah is waning. And sure enough, you're going to see throughout Tkufat Bayit Sheni, without Nevuah, the two primary leaders are indeed Malchut, again, the Melech and the Kohen.
Did the
Choshen
made them work?
In the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, apparently yes, not for all questions. Again, questions of Milchama that they would ask. And now you're right that they talk about how the first Beis HaMikdash had 10 Nisim that weren't necessarily there during the second Beis HaMikdash. And one of them is, again, they're all expressions really of a greater closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, in a miraculous nature. So even if the Choshen didn't always work, and you're right, it's really not the Choshen, it's the Urim V'Tumim that's behind. And the idea was also to show the stature, definitely towards the end of Bayit Sheni, when you have all these Hellenistic Kohanim taking over. No, definitely not. That's an excellent point, right? Showing you that it really was only procured once there were sufficient funds, and it worked only if the Kohen was really of a significant stature. But unfortunately not throughout. So with this we continue with one of the most, I said this before already in Perek Dalet. So here's another very famous nevuah. You ready? Of Zechariah, Perek Zayin. Vayi b'shnat arba l'davish ha-melech. Hayat v'ashem Zechariah barba'a l'chodesh ha-tshi'i b'kislev. Again, it's Dalet Kislev. Vayishlach, but now we're in the fourth year of Dariavish. So you're supposed to say, wow. Again, we're now what year then? It's 518 BCE, which... Very nice, which means that, based on Haggai as well, how long have they been involved in the process of rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash? 2 years. What do you think the Mikdash looks like by now? Very nice. I probably see a shell. Excellent. And, like, people are working on it. Does it look glorious? No. Is it finished? I'm going to prove no, because it's not going to be finished until the sixth year of Dariavish. So it's like halfway there. But, again, picture a construction shell. Vayishlach Beit El Saratzar v'Regev Melech v'Anashav l'chalot b'pnei Hashem. What do these names sound like? Beit El Saratzar Regev Melech. They sound very Persian, Babylonian, nachon, and especially Saratzar, Balshatzar, right? A lot of these type of conjugations of names, and therefore the Parshanim points out that either these are Persian officials or We know, if you look at Daniel, that anyone who lived in Persia, especially for the government, Daniel's name himself was changed to Belshazzar, right? So this could also mean that these are Jews, and that seems to be, again, closer to the context over here. There are Jewish officers from Persia. Does that surprise you, that there should be Jews in the Persian / Babylonian government? Because again, of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Yafem, Ma'on, and they're coming, l'chalot et p'nei Hashem. What does that mean? To greet God. In other words, one idea is they're coming to see like what's going on with the Beis HaMikdash, with Karbanot. The other is, what does it mean to greet God? To come and see the Gadol Hador. Right, who's that? Or the, very nice, or the Navi, right, to request of God. Again, just like by Rivka, v'atelech l'drosh et Hashem. So, how do Chazal understand that? V'atelech l'drosh et Hashem. She went to see, not Hashem, but she me'iver. Yafeh. Again, so, coming to the Navi. Le'mor el ha'kohanim, asher le'beit Hashem tzvot, ve'el ha'nevi'im, le'mor, he'efkeh b'chodesh ha'chamishi. So they're coming to Yerushalayim, where the Kohanim and the Nevi'im are, and they're saying, it's now Kislev, but by the time we get back to Bavel, we want to know, should we be crying b'chodesh ha'chamishi? What are they referring to? Av. So we have to cry on Tisha B'Av. Again, hinazeh kasher siti zeh kama shanim. So we have to separate ourselves. Separate ourselves from what? I don't have all the takanot of Chazal, but definitely from eating, drinking, for all we know. Maybe they separated from sicha, from tashmish hamita already. Vahid v'ashem tzvot adlai lemor. So good question. They ask Zachariah, so what are you asking for us? Can we stop fasting? Now, can anyone tell me, what are they asking? What do they mean by, can we stop fasting? Two ideas. Very nice. Number one?
Can we stop mourning?
Can we stop mourning? Why? Because now we see that the second Beis HaMikdash is being rebuilt. So why should we mourn a Chorban Bayit Rishon if we have a Bayit Sheni? That's number one. What else could they be asking? Again, they dafka come, not when the Beis HaMikdash is finished being built, but while it's being constructed. What are they asking? We know that if there would be a Bayit Sheni, very nice. We know that if there would be a Bayit Sheni, then of course we wouldn't fast. But in this time, we want to know, is this really going to happen, right? Is this one really going to be built and really going to last? Meaning, can we, like, stop it already? So, what does Zachariah say? Vahiz v'ashem ha'ashem tzvot alay le'mor. You'd expect, like, a one-line psak halacha. Oh, no, wait for the entire perek. And more, al kol ha'am ha'aretz v'al konim le'mor. Ki tzamtem v'safot b'chamishi v'vashvi v'zeh shivim shana ha'tzom tzamatuni ani. So, again, back to Zachariah 70 years. You think the past 70 years without a Beis HaMikdash? Hashem says, you think I've been fasting? What's the little subtle musser that the Navi is trying to give them? That's what you want to know. You want to know about the fast? I always say this is a great fast day musser. It doesn't just have to be about Tisha B'Av, right? Meaning that's what you're so concerned with. Okay, yeah, it bothers me sometimes when right before a tannis, right, all of a sudden, like students start asking all their halachic shailot, right? And do we really have to fast? I say halavai, that everyone should be so careful about following the halachot of a fast as they are with following the halachos of Shmir Salashon, following Shmir Shabbos. Right? Again, I always tell myself, I wish you would ask me these questions every Friday. Right? And they don't get that, Shani, we don't fast every Friday. I know. I wish you would ask me, again, halacha questions, show me your concern for it. And that's, to a certain degree, is what Hashem is telling Zachariah. You think that that's what it's about? It's about the fast. You think God's been fasting? What, has Hashem been upset? By the way, has Hashem been upset about the Chorban? Yes, but is it all about the expression of a fast? So here comes the Musar. V'chita chlu, v'chita shtu. Again, so you think that that's what it's about, eating and drinking? Halo atem ochlim, v'atem hashotim. It's only something that concerns you, says Hashem. Again, but what concerns me? Halo atadvarma shakara Hashem b'yad ha'nevi'im harishonim. Here's that term again. Again, that really, it's what Hashem had told the Nevi'im Rishonim again. Who are the Nevi'im Rishonim referred to here? Thank you. Yefem aviot Yerushalayim yoshevet ushleiva v'ares vivotav v'negev ha'shveila yoshev. Again, had only. Again, you listen to those Nevi'im who were living when things were still okay, and they were warning you about the impending disasters. And therefore, what is the musar that the Nevi is trying to give them? It's not about the fast. You want to know whether or not this Beis HaMikdash is going to stand? It's not in my hand, says God. It's in yours. Are you going to learn the messages from the past? Isn't this a great parak? Gets better. Vayitzva Hashem l'Zachariah l'mor. If you really want this to last, then don't focus on the fast. Don't focus on the tzara of the past. Focus on what led to the tzara. What led to it? Your chataim. And therefore, what do I want from you? Mishpat emet shvotu. So judge people fairly. Chesed rachamim asu et ish et achi. V'almana v'yatom v'ger v'ani al tashoku. And don't oppress the lower classes of society. V'ra'at ish achi v'al tachshavu b'vavchem. V'yamanu la'akshiv v'yitznu katef soreret. V'oznehem echvidu mishmo. Because people were so stubborn. V'libam samu shamir mishmo et atarev et adver mesha shalach Hashem tzvot baruchu. V'yan ha'nevim harishonim. V'yiketzef gadol meit Hashem. These are redundant terminologies that you're supposed to know from the first nevuah of Zechariah. V'yi kasher kara v'lo shameu. And when the nevim called out and people didn't listen, ken yikru v'lo ashma mar Hashem. So too they called and then I wouldn't listen, says Hashem. And that's when I led to this disaster. I brought a storm that scattered them to lands that they did not know, and I left the land desolate after them. And I placed this beautiful land desolate. So now, the impression that Zechariah gives us is that, not because you're so great, but because my wrath has finally subsided, and I was sufficiently jealous for you, Yerushalayim, I'm giving you another chance. I've returned to Tzion, and now I want Yerushalayim to live up to what it's supposed to be. What is Yerushalayim supposed to be? A city of Yira, a city of Shalom, a city of Emet. And I want Yerushalayim, Har Hashem, to be the center. Ahem, anti-Shomroni over here. Komar Hashem Tzvot. Od Yeshvuz Kenim Uskenot Brachavot Yerushalayim. You're all familiar with this pasuk? Yes, because people say that now we're living during the time of the fulfillment of this Nevuah of Zechariah, and as you enter the Old City, from which Sha'ar? Sha'ar HaPrachim, where you go in with Merkas Harav, on Yom Yerushalayim. This is the pasuk that's engraved by the Sha'ar. Isn't that beautiful? I remember when I went years and years ago, and then it leads you into the Muslim quarter. So I went with Ateret Kohanim. You're familiar with that organization? Again, also for resettling the Muslim quarter. So sure enough, there is that, the Pasuk. And then you have a few of the families of the Old City who live mamash right after you enter the wall. And I remember coming and there were little, like, dati children playing right near the gate as the Madrich Tiul was pointing out, oh, Yishvuzke, Nimuzke, Nopar, Chavot, Yushalayim. I remember thinking, do they pay these kids to, like, sit here? And again, just to show the fulfillment of the Nebuah. It was really very cute. No, I'm really not that critical. But okay, here we go. Back to this. Again, old people, young people are going to be in Yerushalayim again. And just like it's a wonder, Hashem says you shouldn't compare it to the negative of the previous generation, saying, oh, where's that magnificent Beis HaMikdash? You should appreciate the restoration of citizenship in Yerushalayim. And this is part of the beauty of what we experience today. Why this Perek of Nevuah is so relevant. Because Baruch Hashem, we're able to see, oh my gosh, has Eretz Yisrael been resettled? Yes. And the last time it was resettled was when? Here, Shabbat Zion of Zechariah. Isn't that amazing that we're reliving this time period? We're mamash reliving this Nevuah. It's an amazing thing. That's why there are many, many yeshuvim when you come to Eretz Yisrael where they either have the pasuk at the end of Amos, v'natashti, etzad matam v'lo yinachu omi alad matam amar Hashem, to show that we're never going to leave again, that we're here and we're here to stay, or they have this pasuk of Zechariah. Again, odu yishvu zkeinu muskeinu prachavot yushalayim mish mishanto v'yadom yirof hayamim. So back to this, and Hashem says, I'm also shocked by this, pasuk zayin, kol amar Hashem tol, tinini moshe yatamim eretz mizrach, omi eretz mevo Hashem, I'm bringing all my people back from the eastern lands, v'aviti otam shachnu b'toch yushalayim, v'yuli l'amani yaleh l'lokim. I want you back here, but on the right value, says God. So, come on, you can do it, says Hashem. Don't leave it up to me. Again, I already did my part. I brought you back here. I brought myself back here, says Hashem. Now, it's your turn. Now you have to do something. You want this Beis HaMikdash to last? You want to know, is this the real one? Is this the one that will finally get rid of all the tsar and the bechi of the past, of the Chorban? Hashem says, let's see if you change yourselves around. Which, by the way, tells us, was this one supposed to be the last one? Yes. Clearly. Hashem says, come on, you can do it! No, listen to the Nevi'im who are talking to you as the Beis HaMikdash is being founded. I.e., who's talking? Who are the Nevi'im talking? Haggai and Zechariah. Zechariah saying, come on, listen to us. Ki lefnei hayamim ha'im schar adam lo niya. Uschar beima einenu. V'lo yatev lo ba'in shen lo minatzar. V'ashalach et kol amish b'riyehu. Because in times past, there was mayhem. But now, v'atalo ki yamim ha'vishonim ani l'shevita mazeh. But I'm going to deal differently with you people now. Ki zera ha'shalom ha'gefen titein piriya. V'aretz titein nitivula. Because now it's time for peace. V'ashamayim. And notice that the Nevi keeps on repeating this idea. I know this sounds unbelievable, but it's really a peaceful time period. Again, it's almost as if the Nevi talking to us. I mean it. The reason I get so excited is because he can't help but appreciate and feel the reverberation of the words of Zechariah in today's time. And again, to think about it, I think, again, remember I told you when we had the shiur on Neshama and Talmud Torah that I'm so excited that I was born into this generation, but on a national level as well. Like, I think I have nightmares about being born in the 1930s, nechon? But wow, Baruch Hashem, not only was I not born in the 1930s, or even the 1940s, or even the 1950s, I was born in there, the 1970s. Why am I so excited? Again, this is a time for shalom in Eretz Yisrael, right? Wherein you just feel it around you. Now you're supposed to say, I don't know, not so shalom all the time, but definitely shalom compared to previous generations. Okay, now where at least we have autonomy over here. And yes, we definitely aspire to more. And va'aretz yitein etivula va'shamayim yitznu talam ve'enchalti et shevita amazeh et kol eila v'yakasher hiyitam klala b'goyim, just like you were. And think about this. This is so strange. 60 years ago, we were such a curse amongst the Goyim. Right? No one, if you would have asked anyone in the world, would they have wanted to be a Jew in the 1940s, what would anyone have said? Oh, no. Again, now, yes, people, wow, do you ever get this? Like, when you go, you're Jewish? That's so cool. Wow. I love this even more. You live in Israel? And I'm not even talking about, I'm not talking about the Pakistani taxi drivers, right? I usually don't tell them that I'm from Israel, but again, everyone else, I'm very proud. Why? So cool to live in Israel today. Just trying to encourage you here. Why is it so cool? And back to, like, I live in a super advanced technological country with, like, that has just built itself with, by the way, and we were just talking the other night, someone was asking about good restaurants to go to in Manhattan. And I have no cheshek to go to any good restaurant in Manhattan. You know why?
Yeah,
the best ones are in Israel. Not that I go to them, but again, you should just know. Or again, when people talk about Torah opportunities here, what do I know? That it can't compare to the Torah opportunities in Eretz Israel. You know this, and whether and by the way, any field of pursuit of career, right? Can you on a high level in Eretz Israel? Yes, yes. Even anthropology and history and education. Yes, definitely engineering for sure. And I'll write a recommendation for transfer students to the Technion. Okay, here we go. So now, back to this. Gena, be excited, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were once a klala, but now. Gen, Beit Yisrael, kenoshia etchem ve'yitem bracha. Al tira tachzakna yidechem. And the reason why I can't help but getting so excited is because you really see this today. Pasuk Yudal. Kikol ma'ashem tfolot kasher zamamti laharalachem. We've seen this going back to the beginning of Zechariah, which tells us that we're reaching a certain conclusion. This is a nice bookend with all the words. Zamamti, katsaf, gena, sheirit Yisrael, ani Hashem, yelachem lalukim. The same exact words from the first Nevoah, do you all see this? This is a very nice chatimah me'impticha. And with this we now see, Hashem says, v'aktzif avotechem oti, just like I was angry when the previous generation got me upset, Amar Hashem Tzvot, v'lo nichamti, and I didn't consult then, kin shafti zamanti b'imahem, leitiv et Yerushalayim v'beit Yehuda al tiro. Now I'm rebuilding, don't be afraid, el advar masher tasu. So again, this is a reminder, this is a formula. Dabru emet ish et reu, emet u'mishpat shalom. And I want you to see justice and peace. Shavtu b'sharichim. So stop looking for the negative in everyone all the time. Right? This is such good musar from a Navi. Right? Don't look at the evil of another person. When something happens, what should you do instead? Look at the positive. Right? And I mean this, like I do this with my children all the time. Okay, see the positive in that experience. Right? What did you gain from this experience? Can you think of something that you learned from this person? And ushvat shekar al tiyavo, and don't start like swearing, especially in vain. When do people do this? When they don't want to return lost objects? Again, perikam afkid. Ki et kol ila asher saniti nu Hashem. I can't take that. So, just as a reminder, you want this base of mitzvah to last, it has to be based on a social society, a socially just society. Vahitvar Hashem tzvot elei lemar. Komar Hashem tzvot. Notice, by the way, I'm sorry, turn back just for a moment, perik zayin. That's right, that they asked about Soma Hamishi. What did Zechariah add when he says? He says it's not just about Soma Hamishi. He also adds Hamishi uvashvi'i. Did everyone notice that in Pasukei? And why does he add? What's the Tzom Hashvi'i? Tzom Gedalia, right? I know he's not referring to Yom Kippurim because they're talking about whether or not they still have to keep the fast of the Chorba now that the Beis Hamikdash is being rebuilt. Why does he add Dafka Tzom Gedalia? If I would ask you to rate the different Tzomot from like Kal El Hachamor, what would you do? That's like the easiest one. You put Tzom Gedalia on the bottom, right? And then Asar B'Tev, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, leading to Tisha B'Av, right? Meaning that the worst, what is Zechariah saying? No, you got it all wrong. What are the two worst ones? Tisha B'Av and Tzom Gedalia. It may not be expressed halachically, but why is Tzom Gedalia so terrible?
That's
that came from within.
Very nice. Yefem od, that the Tisha B'Av was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, was the presence of the Shekhinah in Eretz Yisrael. But Tzon Gedalia led to the lack of presence of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. The end of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
It's also, obviously all of the other fast days are brought about because of the sins of the people, but Tzon Gedalia was caused literally by the actions.
Very nice. And that's a great way to give Musar, right? Talia said also, the other ones were externally they felt the punishment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is, they caused the punishment internally, right? It was just because both they had assassinated Gedalia and they didn't respond properly to the situation despite the fact that the Navi told them to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Excellent. So note how Zachariah concludes here. So the Psak Halacha, I told you you'd have to wait a whole parak for this. Kamar Shem Tzvot Tzom HaRvi'i. What's Tzom HaRvi'i? Shabbat Sabbat Tammuz. Tzom HaChamishi? Teshava. Tzom HaShvi'i? Thank you. Tzom HaSiri? Why this order? Chronological. Right? From, again, Nisan. And on, Ye Levet Yehuda, meaning your entire year of fast. And I always find it funny, all the mics in camp, right, they think we're nuts that we fast in July and then we fast again in August. And then it's a good thing they're not around like next month. Yeah, we're going to fast on the 3rd of Tishrei and then again on the 10th of Tishrei. And for those who fast Bahab after Sukkot, like, they probably think we're a very, I don't know, ascetic, monastic religion, right? But really, are we? Do we really have so many fasts? It's really not so bad. These are they, right? These are the fasts of the Jewish calendar. But note that to a certain degree, like, we go from fast to fast, right? You think, okay, we finished with Tisha B'Av, but there are a couple coming up, right? Nachon? That's even psychologically, he says, not to worry. All these samot, yelavit yudah l'sason l'simcha. And yes, not only will you not fast, but they're going to turn into days of happiness. Why? Because you're going to realize how you learned from your mistakes. Ulamodim tovim. But what's the condition again? Ba'met v'ashalom ehavu. Anyone remember where else this appears in Tanakh? Ba'met v'ashalom. And Esther, very nice. At the very end, it says that Esther and Mordechai, after sending out the original Igeret that we call Megillat Esther, it says that they rewrote it, but they added it in, I would say, an epilogue or an appendix. Right, again, what did they add? And then that Devei Shalom ve'emet. Basically, here we see that they're more or less contemporaries of Haggai and Zechariah. They added these words of Shalom v'Emet, telling them, you know, we have an opportunity to return to Eretz Yisrael on the condition that you would unite and start dealing more justly one with the other. So, again, for all those who, for now, happen to be in Chutzaretz, I would at least say that you can be part of the fulfillment of this nevuah by doing what? Even if you're not going to help establish Eretz Yisrael for now, what can you do? You can establish societies, communities that are properly based on these values that can then... That can then, Emirat Hashem, be transplanted in Eretz Yisrael. The last few, Psukim of the Perek, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvod, Od Asher Yavo Amim Yoshvei Yarmim Rabot, V'achu Yoshvei Achad El Achad Limor, Nelcha Haloch Lachalot Pnei Hashem. He says, wait till the time that different nations are going to come and they're all going to say, let us go! Also, this is a nice end to the Perek, where we have these, not clear, these Jewish Persians or these Persian Persians who are coming to Yushalayim. He says, in the future, all the nations are going to go, and they're going to say, so Talia, you want to come with me to the Beis HaMikdash? And they say, yeah, for sure. And then Zvara's going to say, me too, El Chagamani, Uvau Amim Rabim Goyim Atumim. Levakesh, Aviyad, Anachnu Mesamim Achshav. Levakesh Et Hashem Tzvot B'Yushalayim El Chalo Pnei Hashem. It's going to be the most popular thing to do, again, to go to Yushalayim. Elal is going to reduce their fares ridiculously. Kom Hashem Tzvot V'Yamim Ayim Hashayach Zikos Haran Hashem Mikol Lishonot HaGoyim. Even there are 10 people from all different nations, from all different languages. V'chzikdu V'knaf Ish Yehudi. They're going to grab on. They're going to say, Esti, are you Jewish? And they're going to say, yes. So can you show me Nelchai Machem? Kishamanu Elakim Echem. We heard that God is with you. It's so cool. Can we go with you? Again, and can you show us around Yerushalayim? Can you show us the Beit HaMikdash? Isn't this beautiful? So now what we're going to see is that this is the end of the main Nevuot of Zechariah. We saw the beautiful bookends over here, which tells you Tet Yud, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Aleph are really, again, another theme, or I'm going to ask Tet and Yud another theme, and then Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Aleph are the eschatological Nevuot that Be'ezrat Hashem we're going to learn tomorrow from 1 to 2. Is that okay? That's going to be our final Shi'ur and Treyasar that will also, not to worry, take us into the three Prakim of Malachi. Be'ezrat Hashem. Oh, even though they're back, apparently, rumor has it that they're trying to return to their campsite later this afternoon. Yasher kochachen. Okay, and now, these wonderful Kabutot over here. Yasher ma'od. Okay, hello, what are you doing? These are my favorite that I share. Kenna, we've lived together for 2 years already.
Yes,
2 years. 2 years. Nachon ma'od.